Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. The game we're talking about is Alone in the Dark, 2008. This isn't the Alone in the Dark I was thinking about.
Once you get into Central Park, it actually becomes a sandbox game.
How accurate is the depiction of Central Park?
Remember a time when a sandbox map the size of Central Park was considered big enough?
It definitely feels big enough in this game, too. Because you have to drive in the car, it becomes a 50-50 chance that you will accidentally propel yourself off a cliff.
One time I remember I was driving in this game and I drove over a curb and basically the entire car's suspension just flew off.
That sounds like Central Park. Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
For some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge and lay maintain with a course saved the colleges. To HG101, we give the honor. Thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as to Tanga, Cal, and Bobinata, Booker, Hart, and others. Discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure. And look, they wrote a book about it. Go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease. and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, but just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power.
Gotcha!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another exciting episode of this show. On this episode, we're going to be talking about Risk of Rain, which was nominated by @BigfootGolem, probably through the slush pile, I'm guessing, but maybe not. Might have been nominated a long time ago. It was developed by Hapu Games and published by Chucklefish. Earliest release date and territory was November 8th, 2013, worldwide, for the PC. And who is with me to talk about Risk of Rain?
Me and only me. Word on the wind.
Let's try that again. So it sounds like it's intentional that we're not like short staffed. let's make it you would be surprised by how professional people assume we are. And I give them no reason to, but they,
I can give that honor to no one better than our guests who are always surprised.
Wow. You guys, this is really shoestring operation. Oh, you know it. So let's do this. Risk of Rain. So yeah, this is a game it's one of those games that I'd seen for years and be like, that looks crazy. That looks like it could be really cool. I should check that out sometime. And then probably once every couple of, 6 months or so, I'll go, I should load up Risk of Rain. Maybe this will be my time to do it. Give it a shot. And it's like within 10 minutes, I'm like, oh, hell no. not because it's bad, just because it's like, we got to explain it first.
Right. So
it is the world's... Yeah, go ahead.
This is a co-op capable action roguelite game wherein you will pick a character and each character has, their own little set of business. They all have their own different movement scores and basic attacks and passives and utilities, and you're on this alien planet because your entire ship was just cruising along until a space wizard just decided, nope. Screw you.
And, space wizard, you say?
Yeah, and just, makes your ship just dive down to a planet that is full of hostile aliens that are all labeled as being Lemurians, which is, you know, one of those many, you know, mythological things that people like to hearken on to. And so you got, like, all of these, like, lizardy dudes that do, like, all kinds of varying things, and they have, like, kind of, like, an adaptive growth sort of thing. So it's, like, if you do, like, a lot of, like, fast attacky, like, attack spammer kind of things, they tend to, like, get better defense against, like, individual attacks to lessen the effectiveness of that. If you do more, like, burst attack kind of things, then they, like, bring out dudes that are, you know, more like fast attackers to disrupt you and that kind of thing. It's like it tries to basically keep you on your toes and not let you get complacent. So you have to like constantly be like on your game the whole game.
Yeah.
And as you play, there are various like pickups that you can acquire that will boost your performance in some way or another. Like some of them are very basic, like they'll raise your attack or they'll raise your health or they'll let you do this thing or whatever. Like there's a huge variety of them and going,
I would say, yeah. Like if you have a good run in the game, you will be picking up lots and lots of these power ups, and each icon that you get for each power up will show up at the bottom of the screen. Mm-hmm. And so like, there's a point where like, if you got a really good run going, it'll be just like a bunch of crazy icons. And some of them stack, I think.
Yeah, like, for things that you pick up multiples of, if I recall correctly, like, instead of like, having two icons, it'll, like, have, like, the icon with, like, a times two over it or something. Because, you know, that would be a little space hoggy.
I mean, I guess that's not super interesting, but that's to give you an idea of how much of the, like, how many power-ups you're getting. Mm-hmm. Like, if you played Rogue Legacy, which I think is a game that a lot of our listeners probably have played, you know, that game has a fair number of weird power-ups and, like, you know, kind of like the, you know, there's the hedgehog curse famously and all that. And, you know, the stuff you get, this game is like way beyond that. And it's really hard to tell sometimes like what your power up is doing. Cause the game is zoomed out like to a point of insanity. Like that was the thing that got my interest. And I don't know why, but there must've been like a time where people were like, what if we made games where everything was just like really tiny and the screen was huge?
Yeah, for like a point of reference, you occupy basically like 1% of the screen space.
Yeah, it looks like I don't really know what it looks like. What was that? Is there like that? Was it N plus or something like that?
I never played
that
one. I couldn't tell you.
Is that one? If that's what I'm thinking of, that had like,
I think
a really
that might be
character.
What you're thinking of. I've never played it, so I don't know for certain. But like you say, N plus, and my like the back of my head is going, yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, it's one of those games I didn't play it. I just looked at it. I'm like, I think what I remember about it is the character seemed abnormally tiny. And I guess the point of that in this game is that there's a lot of power-ups and weapons and stuff that will just like fill the screen with craziness. And in one way or another, or the enemies will just fill the screen in some ways. And that's kind of like, I guess, is just to allow that, but also to allow a little bit more of a, I mean, it has roguelike elements, as we discussed. There's like, you know, randomized stuff, like which items you'll find is random.
Like even, I think even like which levels you go to.
Yeah. Which area you start at. Yeah.
Like it's been a long time since I played this game. Cause you know, I was like, I'm just going to come out right out and say it. I'm not a fan of this game. I have problems with it, but we'll get there. And so it's like, basically like your big goal on this is to like, you know, on each individual level is to reach a teleporter that's going to take you, you know, further into the game. And the longer you stick around in a level, like the more badass enemies are going to get, but like also they're going to like start giving better prizes. So there's like an element of risk reward there, but like from everything I've always spoken to with who's played this game, you basically just want to leave immediately because it, like, scales unfavorably to hang around.
Yes, it does. If you, like, that's how I kept getting stuck, too, is that I would be, let me, like, you know, do the Metroid thing and, like, just, like, check out this whole area and see, like, get as much money as I can. You know, you want, like, if you have the idea of, like, I think I'll farm these bad guys and that's how I'll gain money and I'll buy. Don't do that.
I'm going to get all the power-ups, no.
Do not do that. Because, as you said, the enemies are adaptive, which I kind of have an issue with too. Although it is a cool idea, I don't know whether that's like my favorite kind of game design choice, but
it's
there's a reason
one of those
for that.
Things that when it's done well, it really works, and I don't think this is one of those games.
Yeah, I mean, anything that's done well will work. it's like, there's, it's one of those sayings that's kind of like, so it's
like I've kind of been beating around the bush on this one, but I'm actually, if I'm being real, kind of like running short of things to say without bringing up what my concerns are.
I think there's still plenty to say. So like the goal of the game, right, is first of all, what the hell does the title mean? That I cannot figure out.
I don't know.
So it's just a cool sounding title, I guess. It does rain sometimes.
I think it's like always raining in the first level. I don't think it is in later levels.
So it's not really like a risk of rain. It's just happening.
It's a guarantee of rain. And then, you know, tonight's forecast, dark, followed by light in the morning.
Yeah. So it's, you're like moving around. You'll start with a goal. Say, get to the teleporter. And you got to do that. And then like what happens next?
Basically, it'll shift you over to like a different tile set level. It's like it could be a forest, could be like some kind of temple. I think there's a desert in there or something. And, you know, it's like each biome is going to have its own, you know, unique brand of potential enemies to be running into. And there's a lot of movement to be had in this game. It's not just like we said, that it's like it's an action game. And it's like, you know, there's like movement. Like it presents itself as a 2D platformer. And it's not just platforming. There's also like climbing and a bunch of other stuff, and it's like has like, you know, kind of like specific rules about climbing and etc. Mm-hmm. And you know, some platforms are going to require you to like need a double jump to do them, and some of them are going to need you to double jump while you have like a speed up power up to achieve it, or you need to be playing a character with a certain kind of movement tech to reach it.
Yeah, we like, should mention like, really quickly, there are different character classes you can start out with, but yeah. Initially you just have the commando. The main thing is dodging, the commander is
very basic, has a dodge roll and like dual pistols, and I think throws a grenade, or is that the, am I conflating that with someone else?
I don't think throws a grenade. It has like a knockback shot. It's not really, we're not going to go through all of these characters.
Yeah. But
classes, but yeah, it's like, there's different things you can do in the areas depending on which class of character you are. And there's different ways of playing the game.
It's a very straightforward, you know, it's like of them, it's, you know, it's the straightforward one that just kind of works. And it's like, okay, it's got, you know, a dodge roll with iframes. And of course, if you want to get anywhere with any amount of, you know, and ability to your speed, you're going to be rolling everywhere because it's faster than walking. You know,
yeah, the game is also
fashion.
Seems to be designed to be played with a keyboard, and it takes some getting used to, because the way it works is, I'm guessing there's some probably MMOs that work this way, as I recall, but it's like it doesn't use WASD, you know, it uses the arrow keys, and then your four attacks are like Z, X, C, and V, unless you change it, of course. And there's different recharge times on those attacks, and that seems so familiar to me, but I haven't played a game like that in such a long time.
Like, I have played some MMOs that do that kind of thing, but, you know, it's like anytime I run into that, I'm just like, we're not doing that, and where's the keybinds?
Yeah. I mean, it's, well, the reason why, like, the game, oh, I know one. There was the, I don't know what it's called now. It's still going on, but I haven't played it for a long, long time. But it was the, I think it was like one of the, it was like a Marvel superheroes MMO. You know, it's like free to play. I can't remember. I think it was just called like Marvel Heroes, like, and it had like a year, like it was a sports game. So I was probably playing like 2016 or whenever.
I think, wasn't that a Diablo-like?
It was. And
I know that game. I never played it, but I had a friend who did.
Yeah. I enjoyed it, but there was a point where I kind of like, I have like a ridiculous amount of hours on Steam on that thing because I kept falling asleep with my laptop on my lap. And so I'd wake up and it'd be like 5 a.m. And you've been like just standing there. It's like just like, you know, Black Panther or somebody just standing there perfectly motionless for like hours. But yeah, like some of the characters, especially the characters that had like my main guy was Doctor Strange. He's my favorite superhero. And Doctor Strange has a bunch of crazy ass spells. And so that's how it kind of worked. And you'd have like a whole row of spells set up for, I can't remember if it was, you could put them on anything, but I think it might've been even like number keys, as weird as that sounds.
Well, that's what most people do in most MMOs.
Yeah. And then there was like, you'd like, they all had different recharge rates. And so you would just kind of set them up and you could thread them out
and buffer them.
Right. Yeah. So you'd have like three different sets of spells to cast. And then you just, and then if somehow.
I totally don't play FF14 over here. I wasn't doing that an hour ago.
And so it was just like, you would just have this thing where it's like, oh, I've got the perfect combination. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 1, 2, 3. Tab to switch the sets. 1, 2, 3, 4. It's like, it just keeps going. And it's like, it got to be ridiculous. But it was really, the fun part was like coming up with the combinations.
for me. And then, but actually doing it was like, it hurt my hands. Like it just a recipe for carpal tunnel. I don't think this game is meant to be like that, but it's interesting that they take that.
Yeah. Like 4 is the magic number as far as like your abilities are concerned.
Yeah. You've got 4 and then you've got like your item use thing, which also does, it's not like a, I don't think the items are like, it's not like Castlevania where you have to collect more to use them. It's more like they also just have higher recharge rates. Yeah. So it just takes longer to use them up. And yeah, so you can get grenades that way.
In a manner of speaking, yeah.
Yeah. And so like it's interesting. What would be a good way of playing it is if you had like some way of playing with a D-pad on one hand where you could clutch it. Like a D-pad, and on the other hand, it would be like a Neo Geo button layout, which is like, you know, with one extra button to do the, you know, so it really, that part threw me. But I think there's a reason why they did that. And also the fact that like, I could not for the life of me get it to just recognize any of my controllers, and I don't know why. So I don't know, maybe it's perfectly easy on the controller setup, but there's some logic to it, the way that it works, because I, to be honest, did not play long enough to unlock too many characters, and the only one I could actually survive with is the first one. So
yeah, that kind of leads into issue part the first, which is a lot of the unlock conditions are kind of unreasonable for more characters. Like, a lot of them are reliant on, like, game clears. So if you are not good with the commander, then you're going to have a lot of trouble even getting characters that might more suit your playstyle in the first place.
Right, that does seem kind of odd, doesn't
it? It's like, okay, you can play this multiplayer with co-op with, you know, friends and whatnot. And so, you know, you might be able to be fortunate enough to be, with someone who is either competent enough to carry you through it or has played enough of it to have unlocked other things that, you know, they can, enough stuff that, you know, the game is more overall manageable. But like, if you're just kind of, you know, doing this on your own, a lot of the unlock conditions are just unreasonable. And that kind of leads me into my core issue with the game, and that's the way that the pickups work. The game is very much balanced in such a way that if you never pick up any pickups, you will always lose. Like, yeah, maybe there's someone out there who, you know, is like Tazbot levels of performance or something. You know, this isn't it's not my hobby to go looking for, you know, that kind of thing. But this is definitely a game where your run is going to be dependent on what pickups you get. And it's like, if you get too many crap pickups, you're going to have problems. If you don't get enough pickups, you're going to have problems. And a lot of, you know, the pickups that are actually going to be more likely to help you secure a victory are the kind of things that you need to either be playing for a very long time, or you're going to have, you know, broken a lot of milestones, like, you know, complete the game X number of times.
This is
so, it's just kind of like,
this is fascinating for me to hear you complain about this, because as our listeners will may remember, Word, she's the person who not too long ago was fighting hard to make NetHack the number one game on our list. The complaint and her complaint about this game is that if you don't get the good pickups, then your game is just done.
Well, as I pointed out in the NetHack episode, there are many statically placed things that, if you know to look for them, are available for you to get. And that is not the case in this. There is no consistency between any playthrough beyond the monsters get harder.
But it is true to say that NetHack and its ilk are very much games where if you get bad item drops and stuff, like, it's a lot harder. It just might not be as impossible as this game gets, but
also to consider that NetHack does not unlock anything. Everything is in the game already. So all the tools exist to be had in the first place. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, do they show up or whatever. In this, you have to work to unlock the things that make the game beatable in the first place.
If NetHack only lets you play additional character classes by beating the game, then most people would never see those character classes.
No, they'd see it because they would cheat.
Yeah, you'd have to.
But, they would just like screw with the code.
Yeah, like, but with, I mean, I think that would still, I think if NetHack were designed today, which is impossible, I mean, that's crazy talk, but like, just let's say we live in a magical fairyland where that's possible. I think they would do something like that. I think that's kind of expected because there is a sense of like, it, and it would probably start out like, oh, you play like the wizard class first. And then it, if you get like to the 10th basement floor, then you can unlock this character. And if you get to the 15th, you can unlock this character, whatever. I can't remember how many floors you get to, but
a lot.
Yeah. So like you could do it that way. And I think that would be fair. But
that wouldn't be like too terrible. Like
it's not like this game.
Yeah. Like this game kind of like is a very strong example of something that I see a lot of people have with like the roguelite kind of game where they're balanced in such a way that you're not expected to be able to play and clear the game, you know, from like a fresh run. They expect you to go in and like, even like, you know, if you're like a grandmaster player, it's like if you open up a fresh file, you know, at best you're going to struggle immensely if you're even able to succeed at all.
And we should stress that you cannot save in this game. Mm-hmm. So your run lasts as long as it lasts. It lasts until you die, which is likely, or until you have to get up and do something else with your life because you're a human being who has things to do. So even when you're having a good run, like that is to me the most criminal, because you could easily make it so that you could like quick save. And yeah, you can't like save scum your way through it, but you can quick save. And then that way you like, you've got a good run going. It's like, oh, I've got to like make dinner or something. It's like you don't waste your run. Like, I don't know. This is maybe very much like grown up problems, but it's like, it's very few games that I can.
Right. Know,
I have to be playing pretty late at night. And usually I'm making this podcast instead of that. So,
yeah. So basically it comes down to like, this game very much feels like it was not balanced to, you know, actually be approachable. It was balanced in such a way to just like say, hey, we made a hard game.
I hesitate to say that the game is imbalanced, like I think it's just deliberately hard. And I think that there's
like, I'm looking at like a screenshot right now of the pickupables list, and are in excess of 100.
Right. But that's like after, again, it's kind of like,
and it's like a majority of them are useless and others are, you know, going to be like run winners on their own. It's kind of like the Binding of Isaac problem after a point. Without like the earlier iterations of Isaac, where, you know, it is entirely possible to actually have a winning run without any like, you know, particularly game breaking power ups.
Yeah, I mean, it is the new, for me. I feel like, I mean, how long would it take to finish? How long does it take to finish this game? Like about like what, an hour?
If you have a winning run and you're like going through the levels as fast as possible, it's like 20-25 minutes.
Oh, really? Okay, I know we're close to that.
Yeah, you go through like 4 or 5 levels, and like ideally you want to spend like 5 or less in them, something like that.
Yeah, so like, I mean, you know, there are boss battles and stuff. I feel like the boss battles kind of suffer from this field of play is so gigantic that they're very tempted to do stuff that I don't think like platformers should do in boss battles. Like, you know, they shoot like a Danmaku burst of hell particles at you. And I just hate that in platformers, because you don't move in platformers like a ship in a shoot 'em up. Right. And I don't like those shoot 'em ups anyway. So, you know, but again, like that's the thing where I hate to say like, oh, this game sucks because it's too hard for me, because it might, I mean, that might just be the point. Like if it's too hard for me and I don't enjoy it enough to play it, hey, I paid probably $3 for it. You know, like I can get my money's worth out of this game very easily. And I do think there's stuff, I mean, is there anything about the game you admire or that you think is like good that they
like
should be followed up on?
Like that's kind of the thing. At first, I really liked this game before I realized that, you know, these issues that I outlined were going on. Cause it's like, okay, I'm like, you know, I played this almost entirely co-op with a friend of mine. Like I did some solo runs, but I played with her a bunch. And we were just like, hey, we got this game. Let's check it out. Okay, we're going in. All right. Bang, 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 bang. Oh, shit. Rolling. Action, etc. And, you know, for that, you know, it's really good. But then, like, the more you kind of play it and more realize, you know, that the back end is stacked in such a way that it's really not, you know, a reasonable or approachable method. It just kind of makes it stand out more and more as a game that, you know, could have done with either another pass of playtesting or an adjustment of design goal. Because, like, this is so almost a really good game to me, but it isn't.
Yeah, I gotta say, like, I don't hate it at all. And I do kind of think I'm probably, since, you know, I'm probably going to keep giving it a shot every now and then. I'd also like to point out that we're recording this at an opportune time because I think Risk of Rain 2 is either already out or will soon be out.
It's been out for about 2 months or so.
Yeah.
So I have not played that. And from what I have observed, the people that I know that were playing it very intensely for about 2 weeks, and then I haven't heard anything about it since.
Well, I mean, that's just the way all games work these days.
Like, kind of, but that was kind of like my experience with this for like 2 weeks or so. I was like, yeah, I'm really into it, and then I'm just like, oh.
Best case scenario, you're like Breath of the Wild, and then people play you for like 3.5 weeks. You know, that's just the way things work these days. It's like one of the side effects of just having like incredibly cheap games at your disposal now, like... I don't think this is something that gamers really think about because they think like it should always be like that, but it's really crazy. It's a lot of like there's so many games you can get for the price of one game when I was a kid that it's nuts. But yeah, like I guess for me, like this game, what it reminded me of is like I do the co-op thing is I think does make the game a lot more fun.
Mm-hmm.
Playing by yourself is really hard, and my problem with the co-op is it's really hard for me to keep track of who I am. on the screen, which is the problem I have with a lot of co-op games because I'm a senile old man, but it's that is tough, but it is let's make the game more fun. I inevitably, you know, like we got to probably start ranking it, but before I do, like I do think that although it drives me crazy, like the super zoomed out thing is probably a pretty good idea. Like,
yeah, I think it gives you a lot of visual information on your situation because, like, it's zoomed out enough that you can see, like, basically, like, a floor above and below you. So it's like there's not really anything that can sneak up on you unless, like, you're really not paying attention or it's some kind of, like, sneaky bastard that's supposed to blend in with, like, the background or something.
Yeah, if this were an NES game, it'd be like seeing, like, 6 screens at a time. You know, like, you got to think of it that way. It's kind of like if you ever played that one Castlevania game.
I was just about to say, Harmony of Dissonance or something like that.
Not Harmony of Dissonance. I can't remember which one it was. But
I know which one you're talking about, the multiplayer one.
Yeah, and it's like you can explore the castle simultaneously.
It's like
you get
too
far apart.
It's a zoomed out map, and it's really neat.
Super zoomed out, right. So, and I think that's a cool idea. I am curious what this game would be like if it had that kind of zoom feature. And it would be interesting to see what they could do. Like, what I would consider doing... if I were a game developer with skills and talent and such, what I would do is I would see whether you could make a game mechanic out of the zoom in, zoom out feature. Hmm. And by doing that, and like, let's say like by zooming in, like you lost certain kinds of like hugely powerful abilities, but enemies wouldn't spawn from like, you know, 4 screens away like they do in this game.
I'm actually kind of reminded of the way that the mini map works in the second Blake Stone game, where if you like you zoom it in a lot, it actually starts to, chuffing your battery power, but it shows you secret passages.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, you can do something with it. And I don't blame them for not doing that in this game. I'm just saying it's like, it made me think about that.
Right.
Which I wouldn't have thought about if I hadn't been playing it. But that, I think, is pretty cool. I do feel like, moving on to ranking it, like, the game that it made me most want to play, especially the multiplayer part of it, was like, I really want to play Broforce again. And I'm sad that nobody I know, like, is still playing Broforce, because I love that game.
Yeah, my point of comparison would be 20XX, which is, you know, another game that also does, you know, a lot of the same stuff. It's like, okay, you've got, you know, kind of randomized levels and pickups that make you more powerful and etc. But unlike, you know, Risk of Rain, I can play 20XX and do a clear without picking up any power-ups or any of, like, you know, the start stronger, you know, play aids or anything that you can unlock. Like, I can finish that game straight.
Yeah. So,
I think that, you know, for something that does basically the same idea, 20XX is, you know, a far stronger entry in, you know, design and balance.
Okay, so where would you put this on the list? Let's just go ahead and bite the bullet here and do that.
Oh, man, you want me to leave with this? Okay.
Of course.
All right. As I said, I feel like this is so almost a good game, but it isn't, and... wasted potential is the biggest sin in game develop in my mind.
I disagree, but continue.
So my initial thoughts of where would I put this as I keep scrolling, I think I would put it at 359, just over Donkey Kong Country 3.
Oh.
355, excuse me.
Oh. Well, that makes all like,
it has kind of like, you know, some cool music and, you know, it's got kind of like a cool like aesthetic and feel, but like I feel like it's just about as fun to play for prolonged periods as Donkey Kong Country 3.
Yeah, that's a weird take, but I'll accept it. I can't agree with that. I don't think it's that. Like, look,
I just kept scrolling down the list. I'm like, no, I'd rather play that. I'd rather play that. I'd rather play that. Play that. Pulse Man, I'd rather play that.
I'm thinking more like, look, you
Tapper,
got...
Tapper, I'd rather play that. Plaster Master,
I'd rather play that. I wouldn't, like, Tapper's a perfectly cromulent game, but it's like... Risk of Rain is like, that. it's a game that's very frustrating for me, but it's not a game that I'm like, just like, once I figured out enough about how I'm supposed to play it, I could play long enough to feel like I was enjoying myself, which is something I credit this podcast for, because I probably wouldn't have gotten that far if I didn't have to do it. You know,
that's kind of also like a thing. Like, I feel it would be better if, you know, there was more reward for risking hanging around in an area longer, as opposed to it just being straight to your detriment doing that. Like, that just feels like that's unnecessarily
so
punishing.
The adaptive...
It's like you have to speedrun the game or else.
Right. Yeah, that I do not like. Although, once you figure that out, it does make the game more fun, because it's like you kind of realize, okay, it doesn't pay to just hang around and that's why I keep dying. And so you do get like kind of a boost where you're like, oh, I can actually do something in this game now. But I don't like the way that the adaptive enemy difficulty and patterns and stuff works. And it's because, and I don't like this in any game where they do it, because what it's doing is it's punishing you for having like developing a functioning and working style of play, which I don't think is good. Like, it's great if your game has multiple ways to play the game that will be successful and work and stuff, but I wish they would do the opposite. And it's like, oh, this person likes to play this way, so what we'll do is, instead of making enemies like impervious to that way of playing, what we'll do instead is we'll make the enemies like gear themselves for that way of playing, and we'll increase the challenge of doing that one thing. But it'll still that way that if the player likes doing that, this is the way they can play the game, and we'll let them do it that way.
I think that's
better. I mean, look, that's probably not the people who made this game are probably like, whatever, get good, noob. And you know, that's the end of it. But like, it's, you know, the adaptive thing is, I think you should, there's something to be said for adapting just to the way a player likes to do something and just saying like, oh yeah, we can make this more difficult, but we'll make it more difficult on your terms, rather than saying like, oh, you know how to do that? Cool. Let's just get some enemies who won't be hurt by that.
Yeah. I'm kind of reminded of the way that like, MGS5 actually responds to that kind of thing. Like, if you do a lot of headshots, then enemies start showing up with like helmets. And so it's like, okay, either you need to be really good about pegging them in the face, or you need to, you know, bring a weapon that has high penetration, or you need to do body shots more or something like that. Like, you still have options and you can still do it, but they, you know, they just like kind of like make doing that particular thing more difficult, as opposed to, okay, well, I'm useless now.
Yeah, that's kind of what I mean. Maybe that might even be what I was thinking of in the back of my mind, but could probably be. Wasn't.
You don't strike me as the MGS5 type. I'm just going to throw that out there.
I have the game. I like it. I just haven't played very much of it.
Okay.
I like certain Metal Gear Solid games a lot. I like other ones not at all. So,
all right, I'm a weirdo. You disagree with my placement of 355.
Let me kick this up a little bit and say, like, look... You've got some, because it came out in 2013, I think that works in its favor, because I do think like later games like Broforce, of course, did the similar thing better with like a little bit more imagination. And I do think like the plethora, the cornucopia of power-ups does kind of work against it, because it just becomes this
slog.
It just becomes this thing where it's like, it's hard to even keep track of what does what. It's a little bit much, but there's a lot of replay value to this game, and it's not impossible.
Almost all of them involve playing the bandit, which is regarded as the best class in the game. So,
yeah. So it's like, you know, but what I would do is I would say, like, how about How about above Saga Frontier, below Godzilla Destroy All Monsters Melee? And the reason why I'm saying that is because that's like kind of the tipping point where I think you get into games that are games that either should get a sequel but didn't, or did get a sequel and deserved it. And whereas and this game does get a sequel, I don't know how similar or different it is, and I think it's kind of in that territory.
You're actually really close to something I can kind of agree on. If we drop that below Saga Frontier and put it above Lunar, I can go with that.
I really hate saying that I would rather play, I mean, I'm not saying that, but Saga Frontier is a this game is better at doing what it's trying to do than Saga Frontier was at doing what it was trying to do. And it's also a finished game. All right, we'll flip for it. So heads, it goes above.
I'm not arguing with word.
Heads, it goes above. No, I just, we've gotten all the entertainment value we're going to get out of this one. Heads, it goes above. Tails, it goes below.
All right.
Hit the ground. It's Tails, so it goes below Saga Frontier. Don't anyone ever accuse me of cheating on these coin tosses. Thank you, everybody. And remember, if you're a Patreon patron, you'll be able to hear a bonus episode at the end of this week. And this week is going to be Harvey Birdman, attorney at law. I am not going to be on that one, but I did like that show a lot, and the game is pretty interesting.
I've heard it is a very good Ace Attorney-like.
And you're a Birdman, which Ace Attorney is not. So it's got that going for it.
Gang anyway, stuff, listen up.
For as little as $2 a month, that's what you get. And we do a different one every week. And you'll never be able to guess what we're going to do because our ideas are crazy. And sometimes not that good, but other times brilliant. Anyway, that's all for this one. See you around.
Bye.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rude, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know, I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord. But most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.